Welcome into the BBP. This is the Bengals Beat Podcast presented by Inquirer Sports. Here, your Cincinnati.com Bengals beat writers, Paul Diener Jr. and Jim Ossarski, invite you beyond the headlines and inside Paul Brown Stadium for the scoop on all things Bengals. Find out the insider news as well as listening on conversations with players, coaches, and others relevant to the club. Remember, you can subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Just search Inquirer Bengals Beat Podcast. And as always, you can listen on our free Cincinnati Inquirer Bengals app. If you don't have the app, well, I suggest rectifying that situation immediately in the App Store. Now, if you're down with BBP, let's go. All right, welcome to the latest edition of the BBP, the remote BBP, Bengals Beat Podcast, crossing over land. We're still, you know what, the Bengals and the schedule makers, they screwed us this year, but this is one nice little bit is you get the bye week with a Monday night game on the back end, so it's extra time off, even an extra day and a half or so for everybody. So we're on the remote call. Because people are thirsty, Jim. They're thirsty.
They are.
Right, exactly. You were coming back from Europe, and I saw that on Twitter. You know, people wanting the BBP, and I thought, you know, I was like, Paul's gonna be happy about that when he sees when he lands stateside and he sees the love,
the thirst. You know what? I got to tell you, before we jump, we got a lot to jump into today. We're going to talk a lot about the team at a bit of a crossroads and Paul Gunther calling for change on the defense. We're going to get a lot into what those things are. And we're going to talk about a lot of, you know, the big picture, some games yesterday when the Bengals were off, you know, Steelers, Ravens, all that type of stuff. We haven't really talked about London yet. And how crazy it was, and I think it's relevant here to the people listening to BBP. It was so great being at the Admiralty in downtown London on Friday night of the London game and seeing all the people come up to us, whether they were, you know, lived in the UK or was someone from Miami or from Denver or from Cincinnati or wherever, talking to us, and they wanted to talk about the BBP and talk about why you're mad and all these other things. And it was honestly one of the cooler things I've ever had happen on this beat, was just seeing and hearing from all these people and talking with them about the Bengals that love the podcast and that get by on it. I don't know about you, but that Friday night with all those people there was one of the cooler things, I thought.
It was. First of all, the thing, and I tweeted this out that night, was just sort of the pure joy associated with the team's arrival there. Fans are fans, and they're happy, and usually game day, it's tailgating, and it's fun, but this was different, and you're right, Paul, it was. I definitely give a shout-out to all the Houdet UK people and the people from Cincinnati. Came and found us. You're right. It was a really cool atmosphere. And thank you guys for listening to this podcast and of course reading us, tweeting us and stuff, man. It was a lot of fun.
It was cool. I mean, so many people showed up there and you really felt, but you're right. I mean, think about it though. If you live over there and your team that you follow is going to come in your backyard, I mean, that pure joy of, like, well, when Anthony Munoz walked up and you would see a couple of these Houdet UK guys that were there, I mean, it was just awe. I mean, anybody would get awe when they see, you know, giant Anthony Munoz or Ken Anderson walked over in the middle of a conversation and you just saw, like, the face change on the people that we have been talking to from the part of the Houdet UK people too. It was just like, oh my God, it's Ken Anderson. You know, it was really a wild experience on a really crazy trip in every way, shape, and form. But to me, that ended up kind of being a highlight.
It was, yeah. I definitely agree. for sure. Just because, and you know, we can maybe touch on this a little bit, but you know, the work environment was so unique. And I think BBP listeners do like to hear what we go through, you know, that inside the locker room, inside the business, if you will. And it was stressful, man. I won't lie, Paul. I was feeling the heat.
Yeah.
Good thing we were outside, because man, I was sweating. It was different. It was unlike, actually, on the plane back, I had to actually Paul Dougherty, Doc. I'm like, Doc, man, all these years you've been doing covering games, have you ever been in this type of like sort of work environment? And he said no. And I was shocked, to be honest, Paul. I thought for sure over like how many decades Doc has been doing this.
Yeah.
He would have had a similar, you know, Olympics, all these things he's done. So it was very, very unique in a lot of ways. So you're right, Paul. The game was the game, and that was work. But for sure, the highlight was sort of being around all of those fans who were just so excited to see their team, maybe for the only time ever in London.
Yeah, probably. I don't anticipate them going back anytime in the near future. I think they took their turn, which we had a lot of people asking us about that. Sort of like, when would they maybe come back again? Are they going to be not as a home team, maybe as a road team? Yeah, I think the Bengals feel like they checked that box in a big old way this year, giving up the home game, and they shouldn't need to do it again. And it was a hassle. I mean, there was a lot of logistics that went on to get them there and make all that happen over a year plus in the making. I just don't think they – I think they prefer to not have that hassle for a while. I don't see them signing up anytime again in the near future. But chalk it up as a pretty cool experience, and chalk it up as the dreaded extra column in the standings, which I hate.
Yeah.
I hate the extra column. So now have to have the third column every single time. It's painful as a scribe. What it means to the team, whatever. Now I have to have the third column every time with the things, every time we write it out. That's a pain. That's true pain.
Oh, yeah. And then trying to, you know what? I just think I just found a new, send all your tiebreaker questions to @PaulTheInnerJr. on Twitter.
Hey, I can answer them real easy. It's great. All tiebreaker questions don't mean anything because the Bengals created their own tiebreaker. That's why it was like anything that we talked about earlier about what game meant a little more, because you'd have a tiebreaker situation in your AFC record, and then your NFC games don't count as much, your division game. Nope, none of that matters anymore because they already created it, because they're going to have the one extra half that probably, maybe, nobody else will have, and that, my friends, is your tiebreaker in the AFC for the Bengals. And it may end up being, you know what, it may end up being the reason that they make it, and there's a pretty good chance that it could be the reason that they don't make it, too. Depending on how you look at it. But let's the bigger reasons will be what's happening with the team. So let's jump in. Enough about London. We can get more into that later. There's plenty of other stuff. So the fallout of the 27-27 tie, which, can I just talk about as a fan of Everton at the Premier League? they both kicked off at the exact same time on Sunday, and the Premier League team had a win, and the NFL teams tie. I found that incredibly ironic and could not help but just have complete joy over the fact that if there's ever a place to tie, those British fans, they knew how to respond. They knew how to handle it. It's like, okay, we'll take the half a win. They clapped and they went about their way and had a nice day. They enjoyed the result. You know, there was no confusion there. They're very used to the tie situation, so I was absolutely loving that. But it leaves them in an interesting spot, a half game out of first place. But, you know, you came back, and Paul Gunther said, well, change has got to happen with the defense. There's no doubt something needs to happen because the defense just can take yet another step into the abyss without anybody really knowing how they're going to get out of it.
Yeah, it's Paul, I don't want to say he was – sort of flabbergasted, that might be too strong a word, because I think coaches, you know, want to feel they know what's what and can fix things. But he definitely was frustrated or beyond frustrated, beyond surprised. I think those are words we've used with him through 8 weeks. And yeah, on Tuesday is just, he sat with a few of us, beat guys, if you will, and just was like, hey, something's got to change. It's not going well. So that's what this bye week is. It's self-scouting. And he called out, and look, he didn't go so far as to say the equivalent of Geno Atkins is just a guy, as he did a couple years ago. But, I mean, you don't really have to read between the lines when the defensive coordinator says, hey, there's a lot of older core players who have been here for a long time that maybe aren't getting the job done. And, that can apply to a bunch of different guys.
Yeah, there's a lot of older core players because they haven't changed a whole lot of the personnel in a while, And so what do you do? I mean, that's just it. So what changes do you make? I mean, to me, I want to get this out of the way first. And we had our midseason awards this weekend, and there were some awards that you don't want to receive that we gave out. I mean, the number of options for the most disappointing award was, like, I didn't even know who to choose from. There were so many to pick from, and you just painted the broad brush of the defense.
I credit you on that one.
You're like, I'm just taking the easy way out. That whole side of the ball is the disappointment. I went with Cedric Ogbuehi, but, there's in so many individual players defensively that just haven't been what you would expect. To me, I think when you talk about the possibility of this ship getting righted, I don't think it even comes down to those replacing a younger guy maybe that was drafted in the last couple of years and cutting back on snaps of one of the older guys. I don't even think it's that. Because that feels a whole lot like deck chairs on the Titanic. To me, you got to fix the man driving the boat. And the people driving the boat are Geno Atkins and Vontaze Burfict.
Yeah.
And those two, to me, have to become the dominant players. They're not old. They're not old core players. They are Pro Bowl,
right,
all pro level players that have not played at that level. And that can bring everybody up. You want to mess around with small pieces elsewhere, fine, we can talk a lot about that and who that should be, and that's relevant. But to me, it's all not as relevant as those two guys need to play like Pro Bowl players, and they haven't been near that this year.
Yeah, you're right, Paul. And Paul Gunther did say that, prior to the London trip, where he said, our best guys have to play at their best. So he's said, I guess called everybody out at this point on defense.
Yeah, who's left?
That was,
who's left not
yeah,
that he hasn't called out yet?
Right. So, and when you say our best players need to play best, play at their best, I mean, you're right. That goes to the all-pros and the Pro Bowlers. And there's only a handful. That's Adam Jones, Carlos Dunlap, Geno Atkins, Vontaze Burfict. And so there's that. And then now it's sort of, maybe it's these other role players, if you will, or key cogs. It's interesting, Paul. I don't know. I mean, you mentioned our midseason awards, and we both went with Burfict as sort of the most overrated. I think the word overrated gets sort of misconstrued a lot of times. I think the way we meant it was, there was so much emphasis placed on his return and what it could mean after those 3 weeks. And clearly the one guy wasn't going to be the answer. It just hasn't happened. And, at some point, Paul Gunther on has said, hey, look, this guy didn't play at all in the preseason. Whatever excuses you want to make, I guess they've been made now. Well, okay, the guy's played his preseason. He's had his training camp. Whatever you want to say, I mean, it's got to be better, right?
Yep.
And I know Pro Football Focus loves Geno Atkins. They love the pressures and, which is, to me, kind of for instance, you got a pressure on the Kirk Cousins Hail Mary, and it's like, well, So, we've talked about this. Even other people in the press box, it's like, where's 97 hasn't affected games the way he did a year ago. So I think you're right, Paul. It's if those two, three guys are playing fantastic football, you know what? The other guys don't look as old. It's simple as
exactly.
That.
They don't. They don't. So I think we have to start there, and that's an important point. But now let's go to beyond that. Beyond the guys that are supposed to be good have to play very good. I mean, there's other pieces of play here. So what do you do? I mean, where do you get younger? I mean, where would you start? I mean, if you're sitting in Paul Gunther's chair. Actually, you know what? Before we do that, let's actually listen to Paul Gunther from his chair. I want to make sure we get that in. So. Here is Paul Gunther talking about the need for change and sort of diving a little bit into that. This was during right before the bye week got going last week. So here's Paul, defense coordinator Paul Gunther.
I mean, I'm not happy with where we're at, obviously, yeah. but you know, it's good to sit back, you know, particularly with the new staff and to sit back and really just say, listen, guys, this is where. We got to get better at in these areas. And you don't give the players 100 things to get better at. You give them, hey, boom, boom, those two things. And then once you get those things squared away, you go on to the next thing. So that's really a good time to, because, you know, every week in the NFL it's something different. This week it was the short pass game, the missed tackles. The last week was the zone read. The week before it was something, you know, so on and so forth. So you got to, at some point, you got to catch up and say and head on.
Do you use this week to evaluate personnel individually though?
Absolutely. You know, I told you, we have a lot of guys here who've been here a long time. They've been fixtures in our system for a long time. But like I told them, it's a production business. So, you know, even though you've been kind of a guy that's been here, and I think there's going to be a younger player or somebody else that can do it better at this point, whether it be for 15 more snaps, I got to look at that. Because, you know, like I said, some of the guys that have been here, that have been fixtures here, for some reason or another, whether it's, you know, age or it's, you know, whatever it is, they're not playing at a high level, I got to figure out, you know, where I can inject some other guys that can do it better, or at least try to.
Is that basically in the front seven, or is that
all across the board?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You mentioned this a little bit last week. Will, you talked about Marcus being hot and cold, but you said some good things about Will. Mm-hmm. Is he a guy that has worked himself into at least opening his eyes a little bit?
Yeah, I mean he played a lot as our fourth man rush this week in the nickels. So he had an opportunity to do that. He's getting better every week. So, you know, we're going to continue him in that role, rush him inside some. He's a guy that's been coming on for us.
You think you're going to get vigil sometime?
Yeah. I mean, he'd be a guy. I mean, there's a lot of guys that can't see Tommy Quezzi. He needs to get in there and play and see vigil and some of the others. Obviously, we don't have a few young draft picks, but, you know, some other guys in there that, like I said, if – it's a production business, and if, like I said, there's a certain loyalty to the guys that have been here, that have been the core players for us, but at the same time, I have to do what's best for the team, and I think everybody in the room understands that.
Yeah. Is this a good time for a reset to somebody where everybody go, all right, take a deep breath, take a week, and go again?
Yeah, I mean, it is. I mean, I told him, you know, what were we, like, well, we ain't know what to buy last year. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's like I said, it's a different team, it's a different set of circumstances. And, it's a good time to say, all right, you know, it would have been nice to get the win the other day, absolutely, it is what it is. We can't do anything about it. I always tell them, you know, it's yesterday's paper. You can go down to the convenience store and buy and get yesterday's paper for free. You want to get tomorrow's paper. I get tomorrow's paper, I go to the track and win a lot of money. All right, but so we got to be able to write tomorrow's paper, and that's what's in front of us, and that's all we can concentrate on right now.
Okay, so there's Paul talking about the need for change. I'll ask it again. Where do you think, if you were in his chair, if you were making these moves, where would you start?
Yeah, you really broke this down with the Pro Football Focus guys. I guess it's a couple weeks ago now with the linebacker group, and I just think that has been such an issue in coverage and run defense. So to me, Paul, I think Nick Vigil, you know, they raved about this kid you know, his mental capacity, his athleticism. We've seen, you know, bits and pieces of that. To me, Paul, I think it's there. I think you got to find out. Look, Martellus Bennett and Rob Gronkowski and Jordan Reed and all these guys have been running free. I don't see how the rookie is going to look worse than that group has looked in coverage. You know, in terms of missed tackles, not being around. I mean, look, if he gives up a 45-yard pass and he's 5 yards away, what, I mean, that looks the same as it has. So
you're right.
There's a part of me that thinks, like, maybe that's the spot to give Carlos Dansby and Ray Maluga. I think you have to leave Tez in there, you know, to give this kid some time in space. We've seen him in red zone, hasn't looked great, but maybe, you know, let him run around and use that athleticism. And I'll be a little, I guess I'll go outside of the box here, Paul. You know, Vontaze Burfict's got the green dot, right? He's the master communicator. He's the one who's so smart, right? So what if he moved to the middle in nickel? He hasn't moved great. You know, he tweaked an ankle in practice a couple weeks ago. He tweaked a knee in Washington. I don't know. Is that ridiculous to say Tez in the middle, Nick Vigil on the weak side, and you know, a rotation of Vinny Ray and Carlos in base sometimes? I don't know. I think Nick Vigil's the guy that should see some time, especially in nickel situations where they got these tight ends and, you know, running backs that have really just taking advantage of the Bengals linebackers in coverage.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I do think that you're right. It can't be worse. I mean, you can't be more out of position. At least you may be a little lost, but at least he can do it fast. So, you know, I don't know. The moving Vontaze Burfict to the middle mid-season, it would be a bold move, but maybe bold moves are what's sort of needed right now. It's funny just hearing you talk. When you start breaking down the linebackers, you keep thinking, man, how did that room get so thin? And you're like, oh yeah, because PJ Dawson completely busted and got cut, and
right.
he was supposed to be a guy that was supposed to be starting to help fill in where you wouldn't need
right.
Carlos Dansby to be playing a bunch of snaps, or you could, you know, you could move, you could have versatility with a guy like Burfict or whatever. And that was just a non-factor. So you keep going down the line, I guess, there. I don't know about moving Vontaze in the middle just because I think you want him to be what he has been, and that's a pretty major shakeup. But at that point, then what happens to Ray Maluga? I mean, that's basically, you're ushering him out the door at that point. Because what else does he do? I mean, you're talking about a guy that's a first and second down run stopper playing middle linebacker. He's not going to go play the outside, and that's not his game. So I mean, that would definitely be a major change if they did that and have some repercussions.
Yeah, the easy one is Nick Vigil in spots, and then the hard one is, you know, taking a hard look at someone. I don't know. I guess that's the thing, Paul. I don't know. I mean, in the red, like I said, in Nick Vigil's few red zone snaps, there was one in Denver and the one in Cleveland, which were huge mistakes. You're right, because you can't carry all these linebackers and have them be active if they don't play. But, you know, we go back to the opener where Ray Maluga played 8 snaps. You know, I don't know. I guess where I was thinking there too, Paul, is it's kind of been done before. We've seen a couple games where 58 hasn't really been on the field. So I don't, you know, I don't know. That's where I would go. What about you? Where would you think a younger player or less experienced player, if you will, needs to be worked in or could be worked in this week?
Yeah, you know, I think Will Clark has been pretty effective in his small sample that he's had. He's had about 30%. He's been on about 30% of snaps. And if you look at his production, I mean, his efficiency numbers are about double of what Michael Johnson's have been. And Michael Johnson, he just has not been very productive. He's looked old. He's kind of looked like he's laboring. Oh, is that breaking news? Doing my Schefter. Did you Schefter double phoning it? Double phoning it? All right, well, that's breaking news. If that's breaking news, we'll make sure to break it in. If it's not, we can continue.
It is not breaking news.
Oh, unfortunately, it's probably just like the pizza delivery guy.
Yeah, you know, it's a muffin guy. I gotta get muffins.
Because you gotta get muffin delivery. Because you never know if they're gonna have them in the store.
Exactly.
It's a tough life. Will Clark. No, I just.
Yeah.
Michael Johnson has not been. He looks like he's laboring when he's running after a quarterback or coming around the edge, and I just feel like when I think of Michael Johnson, I think about how great he was at that bend around the corner, and he could get really low and get that crazy angle coming around the edge, and I see a guy who has back problems, you know.
Yeah.
I see a guy who has worked through some injuries and it's caught up to him. You just don't see that same explosion from him right now. And you're right. I think that's definitely part of the problem. I think you need a rotation. And now Wallace Gilberry back in the fold, I think it opens that up as a possibility. Of course, Gilberry re-signed, came back here as one of the moves during the bye week. They also Chris Lewis Harris now with the Ravens after the Bengals waived him and tried to sneak him through again. And they finally got caught after, you know, how many – I lost track. I know it was about 13 or 14 different transactions he's been a part of since he's been here, but – I think this one finally someone said, nah, we're going to go ahead and take this guy. But with Gilberry in the fold, it opens it up for him and Will Clark to be part of a rotation with Johnson as defensive end. And you could get Mike around 50%, 40 or 50% of snaps. He's fresher than when he's out there and give the other guys more of a chance. I want to see a bigger role for Will Clark, and I definitely think that they didn't bring Gilberry in not to play some. And he gives you some versatility and ability to maybe rush the passer a little bit if he can refine some of the magic. But he's not young either.
No. No, and you can argue, Paul. I mean, last year, we talked about this towards the end of the year with him, that maybe, you know, the toll of a couple years ago where he was asked to play a lot and do a lot of different things along that D-line had kind of caught up to him. And maybe, you know, you know, look, he had 7.5 sacks in 2013. He's had 3.5 in 36 games since. So, and in sort of a role of like nickel pass rush, you know, and you'd think he'd have, you know, a little more, maybe 3.5 per season as opposed to 3.5 over. And he's coming off an injury. Like, they wouldn't have signed him if he was healthy or if he wasn't healthy. So you have to assume complete health. I don't know, Paul. I wonder if some of this, too, is you know, how do I say this? It, maybe it's not so much for Nick Vigil or Will Clark or Darquez Dennard or even Wallace Gilberry to come in and make great plays in their X amount of snaps, but it's so the other guys that they're giving breathers to when they are in make those great plays. So if you know, Michael Johnson's only on the field 35% of the time, well, maybe you see a couple sacks now. Or if, you know, Gilberry switches over to the other side and gives Margus Hunt a little bit of a breather, Margus has more in the tank to get off a block and bring down a running back in the hole as opposed to trailing. I don't know, man. I mean, you're right, Paul. At the very start, not so bad that he'll be lost. Surgeries went well. His rehab's going well. I think when you're right, for the issues on special teams, and Pierman was my most underrated player, largely because Darren Simmons' group hasn't really been that good either. But when you weigh the two factors, you need – better players on defense, and William Jackson III is your first-round pick. His return
has to make your defense better just because of if you're right about him, right? So they are leaning towards him, you know, all things being equal. And, you know, he can participate on special teams, Paul. Like we saw it early in OTAs. I mean, he's a gunner. You know, you kind of do the domino effect of things of you know, other guys then can move to different spots, especially we talked about that with Vinny Ray coming back to that unit a little more once Burfict returns. So I think that domino effect that they're hoping takes place a little bit. Jackson III is interesting. We don't know, right? I mean, he got hurt the first day of contact.
You know.
So, you know, no clue. I have no clue what he can do at the NFL level other than we know he is very fast. He says he's stronger. He's put on 5 pounds of muscle because all he's been doing is working out. So,
yeah.
You know, I guess that's a good thing too. You know, but hey, look, you get dropped into a game as a rookie, that quarterback's going to find you. So, you know,
but hey, maybe he comes in and he's Marcus Peters. You know,
yeah.
I mean, what else are you hoping for? I mean, I just don't think they're going to give him that kind of opportunity to come in and play and be Marcus Peters. I don't see him outside of injury happening at the corner position. I don't see him all of a sudden coming in and taking over for in the slot or for Drake or Patrick or any of that. I just don't.
Right.
Don't think that's something that's going to happen. All right. So I think we've covered how sad are Bengals fans listening to this right now. I feel like we've sort of been the bearers of bad, ugly news. I know you want there to be hope. The only hope I can give you is what you mentioned earlier and I wrote about in the walkthrough was that it's every other year they've had where they have had poor first halves, and by the end they've moved well up the rankings and been much better in the second half defensively.
Yeah.
They went from at midpoint in 2012, they were ranked 25th in points allowed, and they finished 8th. In 2014, I believe they were 18th, and they finished 12th. They've been good at reacting, but this one is a bit different. I don't know. In 14, Ray Melaluga was coming back, and at that point, he really did settle down their defense. I just remember how shocked everyone was that year. Wow, who would have thought, because Melaluga was as maligned as anybody, that he would come back and basically end up being an MVP of a defense that had previously fallen apart, but he was in a lot of ways. So maybe it'll be some other secret person that you just didn't anticipate seeing coming on, but it's kind of where it is, folks.
Yeah,
kind of where it is.
Well, here, you know, if there's a silver lining, we didn't spend any time really getting into the offense, because it seems like that has sort of coalesced, and even with the issues with Cedo Boye and Eric Winston, I think that pass pro, they're working around it, and you know, look, I think they can go into New York and go point for point to an extent. I don't know. I think that they found a rhythm there, so it's not all's not lost. Hey, look, Paul, they're 3-4-1, right? So they're slightly below average, and
yep.
You know,
in a half game out of first place.
And a half game out of first place in a very average division. You know, Pittsburgh has – hey, look, that's the definition of fighting between – the line between 8-8 and 10-6 is so thin, and we've seen it where Pittsburgh's look great and then they look bad while Baltimore, I think, is trash. I refuse to believe Baltimore's any good. I don't care about their 4-4 record or whatever it is, so we'll see. But you know, that's the thing. Hey, they're slightly below average to average, and you know, a lot of the teams they're going to be playing are as well. So if you're a Bengals fan, I think you know you're hoping that this defense of Paul Gunther, as you're right, Paul, kind of clicks enough. Just enough to get a couple stops or a couple turnovers. Because now it seems like Ken Zampezi and Andy Dalton sort of found their rhythm on the other
mm-hmm.
side.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, and I talked to Andrew Whitworth after the game in London, and we're just sort of talking about how this – I was sort of asking him about how this did seem like the last few, this was the latest one, where it seemed like the offense really felt like it was humming. It was where it needed to be, really had taken. This was a, that was a game where the offense, I mean, they were doing everything. They were running it effectively. Tyler Boyd was involved. A.J. was being A.J. Jeremy Hill's running and dancing. Eifert, you know, he goes over 100 yards. He's catching third down passes. He's scoring in the red zone. That felt like what the offense, I think everyone is, could turn into. And he said, he kind of joked with me and he said, listen, I've been around this team where we've needed to score more than 40 points to win. If that's what it takes, right, that's what it takes. And it's if the defense can come back a little bit, that's great, but maybe it is a thing where this offense is going to have to really start to carry them. And that makes them just the same as those other three teams in the North. Very flawed.
Yep.
Flawed. Pittsburgh is flawed. I mean, granted, who knows with Ben coming back early what was going on there. But, you know, without Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell hasn't looked great. The Ravens' offense is bad while their defense is good. Flacco's a train wreck. Why are the Bengals with a really good offense and maybe a below-average defense not still better than those teams?
Right.
Not that it means anything in the big picture of making a playoff run, but they could make the playoffs.
Right. Yeah, and it's probably going to come down to the division, Paul, at the AFC West. Lindsey Patterson's Raiders are supposed to be the real deal, at least schedule-wise. You know, they've got some – and it was funny, Paul. I was telling people this in the media room, and you remember this. You got to back me up. Don't leave me hanging. I'm putting pressure on you here. When we were doing our season predictions, and I picked them 10-6, and I kind of joked that this is the year the Bengals will go 9-7, squeak in on some, weird tiebreaker, and then it's the run that no one expected.
Yeah, right.
And it's funny because it's kind of shaping up that way in a way. You know what I mean? Like, there's nothing about this team that, like, last year where it's so inspiring. You could speak to years prior where, you mentioned the San Diego year where it's like they should be better. They should win. And this year it's like, eh. But, I don't know. It's
you're right. And sometimes that is when you least expect it, is when they find a way. And if you got a quarterback that's playing well and you've got a great offense that can go out there and score points, they would have a fighting chance. I think that's what they're hanging their hat on, on right now. Before we jump into a couple other things, I do want to talk a little bit about BetDSI.com, who's on board with the BBP. Listen, if you love football and you're ready to get in the action, you need to check out BetDSI.com. They have over 20 years in the business. They're one of the top-rated businesses. They're safe. You know, I play there, and when you go there, you can do just about anything.
Yeah, Paul, as people know by now, I love the prop bets. Your prop bets make me laugh. They entertain me, but I enjoy playing them myself. So, you go over there, that you can do any prop bet you want. You can get into game action while games have already got going. So let's say you're a little late. Hey, jump on at BetDSI.com. Hey, you can sign up today, get a $10 free. You try their service, you get 100% bonus on your first deposit. And, and if you do win, fast and easy payment on winnings. BetDSI.com, especially now, you get some basketball going on, Paul. Look, we talk about it all here at BBP. So, you can play almost anything at BetDSI.com.
And if you get in quick, you can even get into Trump versus Clinton odds. get in your political odds. You want to get in the last second. They even take that. So BetDSI, they have live in-game wagering, all football, basketball, other major sporting events. Play virtually everything at BetDSI. Go to BetDSI.com now. That's BetDSI.com. Go there now. Use the promotion code BEAT10. Get your free wager. Start winning today. All right. Speaking of sad wagers, I got to kind of watch a little bit closer on the bye Sunday. The so jaggy Jags being so jaggy, losing to Kansas City. Had a chance, I was watching the game cast. I'm like, oh man, look, they scored again. They're going to go down and try to win this game. They're in Kansas City territory, and then Bortles can't do it, which was delightfully predictable. And now, so the latest out is, all they're promising Gus Bradley is that he will be the coach this next week. That's pretty much it. So, basically, my whole dessert and post-drinks at the precinct are about to go up in flames before Thanksgiving, which is just freaking fantastic. That's great. It's really great. It's really great. I was hanging out with my family a little bit yesterday. My parents were asking me, they love giving me a hard time. That they just tell me how much they raised me better than that. With this whole Jaguars thing, which that makes me feel great. It's like even my parents have turned on me with this one, you know. And I agree. It's sad. This is the end, though. I told them this is the end. Like when Gus Bradley gets fired, my allegiance to the Jacksonville Jaguars goes with him. And anywhere he goes, I am against from this point forward. Him and Blake Bortles can pound sand.
Yeah, it has been, you know, I have gotten a lot of joy out of this. And, you know, there's a part of me that, you know, and let's not forget the other end. You know, you're kind of come out on top here. I mean, Chris Kirksey, Browns linebacker, after they took an L, their ninth straight, is like, hey, guys, we are going to win a game. So now he went from saying they were going to go 8-0. Last week, Chris Kirksey said they were going 8-0 and finish the year 8-8. So they lose. They take the L 0-9. And now he says, we are going to win a game. I mean, went from 8 straight to just 1.
All right, maybe we shouldn't be quite so ambitious.
So you guys, mathematically, Paul, you still got a shot. They got to go 7-0, right? 6-1?
The Jags are 2-6. They need to go.
Yeah, but
they need to go 6-2. I need to get
6-2.
They're not going 6-2, Jim. So
can you
need to come to terms
with
the same way I did.
Can you somehow think, well, if they lose next week and Gus Bradley's fired and you lose that part, but then they're sparked to a 7-0 finish?
Right. Yeah.
I don't know.
Right. No, that won't happen.
No.
You don't understand how demoralized.
I'm trying. I'm trying, man. I don't know. I'm trying to help you out, but it's failing. It's failing.
Look, all I know is the amount of appetizers and drinks I'm going to order at the precinct is going to be obnoxious. That no one will ever have spent more money on appetizers in the history of the precinct. I will take all of them. I want all of them and the platter. There's that. All right, so let's move on to what's making you mad. So tell me, Jim, what's making you mad? What's making you mad today?
Yeah, it's funny, Paul. We took a little time off. We went overseas. There's a lot of things that could have made me mad. I could say rock salmon. The idea of rock salmon as a dish. Could really make me angry, but you know, I want to merge some things together, you know, pedestrians and traffic, and honestly, Paul, I don't know if it's the unseasonably warm weather we've experienced here in November, late October, but I don't understand. I'm pounding my fist. Why do people feel the need to walk in the street to where they're going? I'm not talking about, like, the side street of your neighborhood. I'm talking about, like, four lanes, giant median, and people are just like, you know what? There's a sidewalk here, but I'm going to walk in the right lane. I'm just going to walk in the right lane. Some dude was walking wrong way in the middle of these lanes, and I'm thinking, all right, now, I didn't beat my horn because he kind of looked a little crazy. I thought, well, maybe he's just trying to start something. But I was like, or maybe he got caught. Maybe he's trying to, you know, get across, and he got caught. Well, I looked at my rear view, and I'm like, okay, he's got plenty of room now. There's a stoplight. No. He just walked down the street. I don't understand.
Well, I don't either.
You know, sometimes human race, There's natural selection for a reason. Now we don't. We're top of food chain. You know, no tiger's coming to come eat us. But like,
those are killing people off.
I feel, yes, I feel, it's like a Bill Burr bit. I feel if you decide to stay in your home on, like, the Category 15 hurricane when everybody said leave and your house goes away with you in it, I don't, you know, I don't feel bad. You want to walk in the street when there's sidewalks? Like, I'm just saying, like, that shouldn't be anybody's fault. It's like,
no.
You know, I'm not saying I got a ticket. I'm not saying I'm going to jail. I avoided these people, but that made me mad, Paul. It makes me mad. Don't walk in the street.
Don't
walk
what
in
that street. No, because Jim is ready to pull off some natural selection.
Yes.
He's gonna, when he ends up in court, you're going to be claiming, you're going to be like, I plead natural selection.
Exactly.
Oh,
the Yaris is very tiny. It may look like you can, like, stop it with your hand, but you can't.
You can't. It's powerful. It's tiny but powerful. I thought you had to feel so at home over there in London when every car looked like a Yaris.
It was great.
Hey, you know what? In life.
You know the first time I seen the Yaris was, I think it was the Bourne Supremacy. And Jason Bourne, check it, in the streets of Paris, rocking the Yaris.
Yeah.
I'm telling you.
I saw so many. Paris was like that too, because I ended up going from London down to Paris, then came back from Paris, and it was everywhere you look. It was not just a yard, smaller than the yard. The smart cars, everybody's got smart cars,
yeah.
Because you cannot drive around over there unless you have either a tiny. You either need like a Vespa, like a scooter, or a tiny. You are just so European. You are ahead of the curve. People don't understand what you know about life and transportation and the earth. You're worldly with your Yaris.
I am.
If only you could get it overseas where it could blend in with everybody and not just be a tiny little car
getting wrecked. Yeah,
not by SUVs.
True. Yeah. Maybe they don't. Maybe these people in the street don't respect my car. Maybe that's what it is. I don't know.
No respect. All right. Well, glad to be back. Glad to have the BBP back. And again, I want to thank everybody that we met and saw in London. It was awesome. So cool talking to everybody. And shout out to all of you that listen and keep up. Glad to bring it back to you. Again, so we'll be back on schedule this week, even though it's a Monday Night Football game. We'll have the BBP2 for you coming up later this week with more of a look at the Giants. And then we'll try to get it to you as soon as we can. We got to travel back from New York on Tuesday, but we'll try to get it to you as soon as we can after the Monday night game. So that's where we're at. All right. We got to go out with some music. It's New York week. New York's full of great music, a lot of good hip hop. We can go from there. I mean, you've got a whole lot of change going on with it, but do you have anything in the top of your mind?
Well, I always have. We always tend to lean a little old school. I mean, we're not like super old, but I do like '90s rap and, you know, the Dog Pound, New York, Snoop Dogg kicking over buildings. But I understand that, you know, that may not be for everybody. But
most of the music that you really like is not necessarily for everybody. I would say.
I'll defer to you on this one, but. I had to put it out there that, I got to represent the Dog Pound a little bit.
Yeah, no, I hear you. What about like some Beastie Boys? Were you ever a Beastie Boys guy?
I respect what the Beastie Boys did for music and hip hop.
Oh, man. What?
That's me saying I'm not a fan of theirs, but I respect what they did and what they do. So I have no problem with the Beastie Boys whatsoever, none. I'm just not a fan, if you will.
Wow. All right. Well, I just.
But I'm cool with it. Put it this way: let's rock the Beastie Boys rather than Notorious B.I.G. or Jay-Z. How about that? I'd rather go Beastie Boys.
Can you just take more shots at people that I like all at one time?
Well, see, we can't make fun of the Swedes anymore. Someone's wipe out all New York hip-hop legends in one shot.
Oh man! All right. Well, that's funny. I'm going. I'm not going to respond to any of this. You're trying to start a beef, like some sort of East West Coast thing here. I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to go. I like beef. I know you're with some BC boys. I'm a BC boys guy. They're New York guys.
Yeah.
I think a little sabotage. It always fits where. Let's be honest. The defense is sort of sabotaging this whole season right now. So I think it fits that way. So BC boys, we're going to take us out. Jim, I don't care what you have to say about the New York rap scene. You need to calm down with that mess. We're out of here.